This is VOA News. I'm Lori London. U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton says he warned his Russian counterpart not to interfere in the U.S. midterm elections in November. Speaking at a news conference in Geneva, where he met with Russia's National Security Director, Bolton said he made it clear the U.S. will take steps necessary to prevent it from happening.
I made it clear that we wouldn't tolerate meddling in 2018. And that we were prepared to take necessary steps to prevent it from happening.
Bolton said the issue prevented the issuance of a joint statement at the conclusion of the meeting, the first high-level meeting since President Trump and Vladimir Putin held talks in Helsinki last month. More than 19 inches of drenching rain are inundating Hawaii's Big Island as Category 4 Hurricane Lane fast approaches. AP correspondent Rita Foley reports.
Some residents of Hawaii are seeing heavy rain and getting cell phone alerts as the hurricane approaches. Meteorologist Gavin Shigesato.
It looks like it will still be about a Category 2 forecasted when it gets to dangerously close to Oahu.
Which means winds could be over 100 miles per hour. James Nicolay lives in Honolulu.
Even if we dodge it, it's going to be a lot of rain, a lot of strong wind, and I'm fearing damage for my house.
I'm Rita Foley.
U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has named Ford Vice President Stephen Biegun as special representative to North Korea. The executive and former national security staffer is joining the administration at a time of intense focus on the United States' efforts to force North Korea to dismantle its nuclear weapons program. This is VOA. U.S. President Donald Trump is speaking publicly about the possibility of his possible impeachment. He made the remarks in a television interview with from the White House that aired Thursday morning on the Fox News Channel.
I'll tell you what, if I ever got impeached, I think the market would crash. I think everybody would be very poor. Because without this thinking, you would see numbers that you wouldn't believe in reverse.
President then questioned how he could be impeached when he's done a great job. Impeachment talk has increased over the past 2 days after Trump's former campaign manager Paul Manafort was convicted of 8 counts of fraud by a federal court jury in Virginia. The president's longtime attorney and fixer Michael Cohen entered a plea in federal court in New York, admitting he paid hush money during the final days of the 2016 presidential campaign to 2 women who had affairs with Trump, and that he did so at the candidate's direction. Police in France say a man with psychiatric problems was shot dead after fatally stabbing his mother and sister in a Paris suburb. A third person was seriously wounded. Authorities say it happened in the mother's home west of the capital. Authorities said the Islamic State claimed responsibility, but IS did not provide evidence to back up the claim. France's interior minister said that while the 36-year-old assailant was known for advocating terrorism, investigators were not considering the incident an act of terrorism. South Africa's government is blasting President Trump over a racially divisive tweet. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports from the White House.
South Africa's in the middle of a racially charged debate over lawful land reform after decades of white majority rule stripped blacks of their land. The government's looking into expropriating land without compensation to speed up reform. President Trump tweets his administration will closely study South Africa's land and farm seizures and what he calls the large-scale killing of farmers. That came after a Fox News segment claims South Africa started seizing land from citizens because they are the wrong skin color. Johannesburg says the tweet's based on false information, reflecting a narrow perception that seeks to divide South Africa. Sagar Magani at the White House.
1 year after Myanmar's minority Rohingya Muslims began fleeing a military crackdown by the tens of thousands to neighboring Bangladesh, the government says it's safe for them to return, but some international observers disagree. Those who survived the scorched earth campaign last August told aid workers of unspeakable crimes. I'm Lori London, VOA News.
Glory Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Friday, August 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A Uganda military court Thursday dropped treason charges against Member of Parliament Bobby Wine.
This court hereby terminates the proceedings against Honorable Robert Kulani. Before this court, you are accordingly set free unless being held on other charges.
That's General Andrew Guti, chairman of the military tribunal in Guru, Uganda. Soon after the military exonerated him, Bobby Wine was charged again with treason before a magistrate court. Journalist Alex Atuhairi will join us to explain. Opposition leader Chisa Besigye will also join us to explain why he was arrested and detained. And there are claims and counterclaims of renewed fighting in South Sudan.
There was a lieutenant general that was sent from Juba. And the violence continues. So they attacked us, then we repulsed, pushing them back up to their barracks in Fort Gang and killing their brigadier.
Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel is the deputy military spokesman for South Sudan's rebel SPLA-IO. New ambulances as Sierra Leone prepares to launch the pilot phase of a national emergency medical service. And Malawi's film industry is winning awards despite not having cinemas. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A Ugandan military court on Thursday dropped treason charges against Member of Parliament Robert Kyagulanyi, also known as Bobby Wine. He had been charged in the military court with treason for illegal possession of arms and ammunition. Here's General Andrew Guti, chairman of the military tribunal in Guru, Uganda.
Continuing to try the accused persons on the same facts of another case in the civil court will cause injustice to the accused. Two, that it is fair and equitable that the accused person be tried in civil court where he is to be charged with other suspects who are not before this court. Three, this court hereby terminates the proceedings against Honorable Robert Kulani. Before this court, you are accordingly set free unless being held on other charges. We so rule that at Guru, this 25th day of August 2018, under my hand and seal of this court.
That's General Andrew Guti, chairman of the military tribunal in Guru, Uganda. Soon after a military court dropped treason charges against him, Ugandan parliamentarian Bobby Wine was charged again, this time in a magistrate court, with treason and jail in a civilian prison in Guru. He and his co-accused are expected back in court on August 30th. Alex Atuhairi is the publisher and editorial director of an online Ugandan publication. He says the Ugandan government bowed to local and international condemnation of its treatment of Bobby Wine and his co-accused.
Bobby Wine today presented before the military court for his court hearing, and the court sitting did drop the charges in the military court. There was a letter from the director of public prosecution which showed that Bobby Wine charges emanated from the same charges that the other 32 colleagues, including three MPs, who had been separately charged in the civilian court. So the director of public prosecution asked the military court to drop the charges against the MP, Bobby Wine. But apparently, I think the government felt under pressure from the public because, first of all, not only the charges in the military court looked fabricated because he was apparently charged with possession of firearms. But also, everybody thought it was wrong that if you are charged a civilian in the military court, it is.
So you are saying perhaps the charges in the military court were dropped because the Ugandan government came under immense public pressure, even international pressure, because just of yesterday we were talking about neighboring Kenya where journalists and civil society groups there demonstrated on Thursday.
Yes, that's right. Both a lot of local pressure and international pressure.
Alex, were you the journalist, were you able to see Bobby Wine? I know you are not medical people. What was his health situation?
Well, he was on crutches and he did not have
those reported bruises on the face and what have you, but he was on crutches and he looked weak, perhaps confirming that he was not really handled very well during his arrest.
Alex Atuhaire is the publisher and editorial director of an online Ugandan publication. You are speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. The former leader and presidential candidate of Uganda's opposition Forum for Democratic Change says President Yoweri Museveni's government is an illegitimate government that is determined to use force to remain in power. Chisa Besigye was arrested Thursday and jailed for what authorities call preventive arrest. Besigye tells me Ugandans will have to come together to free themselves.
The case for which I'm arrested is preventive arrest. So apparently they arrested me to prevent something, which I don't know. But this, as you know, is not really the first time I've been arrested in a similar manner very many times. Indeed, today, many leaders found their residences barricaded by the police, including the Lord Mayor of Kampala, a number of MPs and some senior FDC party officials found their homes barricaded, the same way I found my home barricaded. So when I went out to inquire into why my home was barricaded, I was just violently grabbed and thrown into a waiting van and driven at top speed to a familiar police facility, which is about 20 miles out of Kampala.
I'm assuming that with elections in Uganda, that there's some semblance of democracy. Can a government just arrest its citizen on the basis of, quote, preventive detention?
Well, an arrest is one of the, I think, smallest infringements that this government commits. It kills people with impunity.
Dr. Besigye, I think shortly before you were arrested, you were quoted in the papers as saying that the government of President Museveni was an illegal and illegitimate regime. Part of that quote seems to suggest that you are saying that the Ugandan people should not put their hopes in election, in choosing their next leaders. Could it be that's why you were arrested?
No, I mean, I've always said that, and it is a truism. First of all, as you know, no leader of our country has ever assumed office because of an election, including General Museveni, who has been in office now for, this is the 33rd year. He did not come into office through an election. He bombed his way into office. So the fact that Ugandans don't have a vote is not a matter of contention. It's the reality. And what we are dealing with, indeed, the violence we are now dealing with of members of parliament who have been thoroughly brutalized, was as a result of a parliamentary by-election in Arua. So what I am saying is that, indeed, an election cannot remove a military dictatorship, an entrenched military dictatorship like that is led by General Museveni here in Uganda. And that, therefore, Ugandans must definitely simply stand up and peacefully protest until this government goes. If that amounts to an offense, I have absolutely no problem standing before court and defending myself. But as you realize, no charge has been preferred against me. So all that is done is simply to abuse our rights and to stop us functioning as political actors in this country.
Dr. Chisa Besigye is former presidential candidate of Uganda's main opposition Forum for Democratic Change. You're speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, August 24th. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 minutes past the hour. Despite last year's signed ceasefire in South Sudan, at least 7 people were killed and dozens others wounded Wednesday, according to both parties, in fighting between army and opposition forces in northern Lee State, which was formerly Unity State. This comes as the parties are expected to sign on Monday next week in Khartoum the recent peace deal. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
The government and rebel forces clashed Wednesday morning in two separate areas of Kwarjeng and Gwit, a few kilometers outside Bentiu, the capital of northern Lechi State. SPLA-IO Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Lampol Gabriel says government forces launched an attack on his forces and killed three SPLA-IO fighters and injured five others.
There was a lieutenant general that was sent from Juba and to make sure this issue continues, the violence continues. So they attacked us and we repelled, putting a part up to their headquarters, or maybe their barracks in Fort Gang and killing their brigadier and nine others.
SPLA military spokesman Major General Lul Roy Kwong says four SPLA forces were killed, not 10.
Three officers who lost their lives. One is the late Brigadier General Benjamin Gawkot Machar. Until his death, he was the operations commander for forces loyal to First Vice President Gerald Abambe Ndiaye. Bang.
Kwong insists the rebels engaged the SPLA, not the other way around.
It was the main military barracks for our army which was attacked, and the place is called Quirgen. The area is called Quirgen.
Both Kwong and Gabriel accused the other side of trying to gain more territory on the ground just days ahead of the expected signing of a final 2015 revitalized peace agreement. Kwong calls the attack the latest in a series of violations to the cessation of hostilities agreement the warring parties signed in December last year, and called on peace monitors to investigate the latest clashes. South Sudan in Focus was unable to independently verify the claims and counterclaims of the two warring parties. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Angolan President João Lourenço has concluded a visit to Germany, where he lobbied for German investment. Veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpar Vaz says Mr. Lourenço's visit was a success.
The big thing is the Angola finance minister sings with a representative of German Commerzbank, a loan of $500 million to Angola, which will support not only imports from several equipments, but also investments in infrastructures, equipment in the industry. And apart from that, Mr. Lourenço also have got a promise from the German Chancellor Angela Merkel of support in terms of defense. Germany is ready to send to Angola some ships of vigilance at the coastline, at the long Angolan coastline, especially taking in attention to the terrorism threats at the Gulf of Guinea.
Mario, I know the president was stressing investment in Angola. I was reading another article where some investors don't seem to be happy with the government so far. They're saying that the government is not moving very fast to liberalize the oil industry.
Yes, it happens recently. A major change, because the Angolan government made a public announcement saying that the country will set up so-called National Petroleum Agency, which in the near future will have the responsibility to give licenses for oil concessions. This is a real big move, because ends the power of Sonangol during the last decades on this matter. So in the near future, Sonangol will no longer have the legal power to give concessions to foreign oil companies.
The president is about to go to China. There was another article suggesting that the Angolan government is seeking Chinese financial aid to train the armed forces of Angola.
Yes, the Chinese are also recently are trying to improve cooperation in the military. And the Angolan government really wants a more qualified training of troops and special ranks in the armed forces. What we have is some kind of cooperation in terms of the Chinese to set up some military industries in Angola. There is no, until now, a clear vision on that, but I believe after the conversations that Mr. Lourenço is expected to have with his counterpart, Chinese president, and other top Chinese officials, we have more details. Angola government also are seeking now for a further $4.4 billion loan from China.
That's veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpavai speaking with me from the capital, Luanda. New ambulances are said to be on the road in Sierra Leone this month as a pilot phase of the government's National Emergency Medical Service launches. The new project aims to eventually have 170 donated ambulances and 1,000 staff. During the 2014 Ebola outbreak, the country's lack of emergency transportation services to health clinics and hospitals was part of the challenge to stop the spread of the disease. The Sierra Leone Red Cross head of communication, Abu Tarawali, spoke with Ricky Schreier about the country's need for ambulances.
Quite apart from the normal need, which is almost always there, from the recent experiences that we've had about outbreaks of epidemics, we have realized that one of the challenges that we had for adequately or quickly responding to those crisis situations was the absence of the means of transporting patients from their communities to treatment centers, and which is one reason why so much lives were lost during the outbreak of epidemics over the last decade. That is one of the reasons why the need for an ambulatory service in Sierra Leone cannot be underestimated. Just one very strong reason, apart from the normal need for non-emergency need for transportation and referral of patients and people who need ambulance services.
What do you think some of the main challenges will be? It's not as simple, of course, as getting these vehicles, I don't think, to Sierra Leone. I mean, what are some of the challenges? Finding drivers, finding workers?
One fundamental challenge among the challenges that I can note is the issue of the capacity, the skills required to manage the service. At least now in Sierra Leone, there is no institution of training where paramedics are trained. Even though we have a college of medicine where medics are trained, but they do not really conduct specialized training for paramedics who should be qualified to manage an ambulatory service. So,
after the project expires in March 2020, while an extension may be possible, Sierra Leone's government would probably take over. And there are problems with nurses' payments in Sierra Leone. And when it comes to the health system in Sierra Leone, you know, I think the system that is already in place, sometimes there are serious issues with them getting paid on time or at all. So is there a concern that the infrastructure is not there?
Absolutely, absolutely. That is an area that has to be dealt with also, because operating an ambulatory service does not only say with having the right equipment in terms of the transportation equipment, the ambulance itself, but it's also about having the right type of facilities in the form of properly equipped hospitals and treatment facilities that should be able to accept adequately handle the cases that they receive from the ambulances. Otherwise, there is a propensity for patients not to survive.
Do you think there will be community support for this type of initiative?
I think there is a potential for community support for such a project, depending on whether it is given adequate publicity to enable community people, stakeholders, people in the private sector and other interested groups.
That was Abu Tarawale, head of communications for the Sierra Leone Red Cross. He was speaking to Ricky Strike from outside the capital, Freetown. Malawi has no film schools and cinemas, but self-taught Malawi directors have won international prizes for their films, seven of which are nominated for the African Movie Academy Awards this September in Rwanda. As Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre, Malawi filmmakers are working hard to build their own Malawi film industry.
3, 2, 1, and action.
Malawian director Flora Suya's first film, My Mother's Story, won special recognition last year at the Silicon Valley African Film Festival in California. And her movie, My Mother's Story, has been nominated for the Best Feature Film at September's African Movie Academy Awards in Rwanda. Despite the international recognition, Suya still struggles to find time and money to make her films. Malawian director Charles Shemjoya has won 7 international awards for his first film in 2009, Seasons of a Life. His latest film is also among seven from Malawi nominated for the African Movie Academy Awards. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, James. We begin in Liberia, where President George Weah of Liberia will today induct former Arsenal coach Arsene Wenger into the country's Order of Distinction with the title of the Knight of the Grand Commander of the Humane Order of African Redemption. Wenger was President Weah's first European football coach. My colleague James Botti asked Liberian Sports Minister Zioga Wilson about the significance of the award.
When we were ravaging our own country through the brutal civil, George Weah was the only positive thing coming for Liberia. He used his personal resources to help his fellow compatriots who were lingering refugees here. He personally financed the national soccer team, the Lone Star, to participate in continental competition because he wanted a positive image. These two gentlemen, they made that possible by giving him an opportunity. So today he's our president. And he believes while these gentlemen are alive, he must reward them for what they did for him. He must honor them, give them their flower while they are alive. And that's why he made a decision to honor the two gentlemen on tomorrow.
Elsewhere in Ghana, Inter Milan star Kwadwo Asamoah will captain the Black Stars in their AFCON qualifier against Kenya next month. The skillful midfielder has been named in Kwesi Appiah's 21-man squad for the match. However, Black Stars keeper Asamoah Gyan and his deputy Andre Ayew have not been listed in the squad. Staying with Ghana, FIFA recently reached an agreement with Ghanaian authorities to appoint a normalization committee to run football in the country. The decision was taken after a four-member delegation from Ghana met with the World Football's governing body. FIFA has backed out of the August 27th ultimatum issued to Ghanaian authorities to withdraw a court case against the Ghana FA. Former Ghanaian international goalkeeper Abubakar Damba wants men with proven track record to be appointed into FIFA normalization committee.
All inclusiveness. It is very, very important to get the, you know, to tap from everywhere, the minds of everybody, their experiences, then we can drive the nation forward.
In cricket news, the South African women cricket team is using the 10-day camp at Cricket South Africa Centre for Excellence in Pretoria to fine-tune for their tour of West Indies. Coach Hilton Morang says their focus is on improving their batting, which will be crucial to winning the three-match one-day international series.
But the World Cup qualifier, the 2021 World Cup qualifier, the first three ODIs, it's going to count towards that. So for us, it's very important to make sure that we start getting points and then start going up on the lock. And because we feel that as far as the squad is concerned, we've got very good cricketers. And all of us realize now we still need to put the performances right and improve on our consistency as a team.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that is it for this Friday, August 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. Join us again on Monday for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Dave Magnus, I'm James Botte wishing you a good weekend.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.